All right, we're back on Channel 9 Live, Pound C9 Live, CH9 Live. Ask questions. Al, I know you're out there. We have a really good one for you right now. Continuing on, the final segment in our JavaScript two-hour block, which has been very interesting. Now, please introduce yourself. Nikhil Kothar, but tell us who you are.
I'm Nikhil. I've been an architect at Microsoft for a long time, working on the web platform. All the technologies, actually, ASP.NET, AJAX, Silverlight.
Nice.
Been with the developer division for a while, and then trying new things in Bing currently.
Excellent.
But I'm also the author of Script Sharp, which is a C# to JavaScript translator and compiler. And so I think this topic is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Elijah Manor.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
And I'm Elijah Manor. I work for Pentoo, which is a small company dedicated to jQuery. We do consulting. I do some architectural reviews, going into companies, looking at their front-end architecture, making recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Do training, and I write articles for them and for Microsoft and other places. So
excellent. So right off the bat, before we get into Script Sharp, which is incredibly interesting, talking to Doug in an earlier talk, he had mentioned about when people are thinking about using UUI
jQuery,
whatever it's called,
YUI,
all these weird names you guys have out there, man. When do you tell people to use jQuery? Like you mentioned, you said you're an architect, and you.
Yeah. Well, our company is dedicated to jQuery. We have, so we tend to use it. But we try to use what makes sense. Our company was founded by two jQuery team members, and so, and then we actually. The lead jQuery UI developer is on our team as well. So we have a lot of...
Excellent.
And at one point there were four jQuery members on our team.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of take that approach because we see a lot of people are using it. Companies, they might not be using it correctly. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. And we try to come in and show them best practices. You know, and really my talk at Mix is, you know, and his tool kind of addresses this. A lot of C# developers look at JavaScript and try to take their knowledge of how C# works and write JavaScript that way. And they run into lots of problems. And then they blame JavaScript because, oh, it's awful language because it doesn't behave like I thought it should, where it's totally different. And so when we come into a company, you could use some of those same techniques to write JavaScript well and apply it to jQuery as well.
Okay.
Because a lot of times, jQuery, I think, is so popular because it's very easy to get started. And you could... have progress really quickly just by putting it in, do something really cool. But the more you write, the more spaghetti-ish it can get and tightly bound to your web page. And so we try to go in and help them abstract that out, learning techniques that they should probably know anyway. So.
Excellent. So now speaking of C# developers, Script Sharp takes C# syntax, gives out JavaScript syntax. The thing that I will ask you right off the bat is... In some sense, there are various constructs in the beginning language. When it goes to the target language, it don't make sense in the target language. Interfaces, for example. Talk to me about how your compiler works.
Right. So there are certainly C# constructs that either don't make sense or translating them would probably result in JavaScript that you wouldn't want to write. and so the Script Sharp compiler actually takes the stance that those things are going to be flagged as errors, not supported in the translation. And really, this kind of goes back to the philosophy of Script Sharp, which is oftentimes mistaken as a tool to say, I have a .NET app, please port it to the browser for me. And it's not that at all.
Okay.
It's very far from that. It's about using C# as a language syntax and the tooling that's associated with .NET and targeting it to the JavaScript space. So you're still very much thinking, you have to think like a script developer that at the end of the day, this code is going to run in the browser, for example. It's going to perform in a certain way. And these techniques, these constructs make sense, these constructs don't make sense.
Sure.
Now, of course, there's a class of constructs that are so core to C# and .NET, like interfaces, that the Script Sharp compiler will actually produce a translation of that.
Okay.
You can think of an interface as basically duck typing of sorts, implemented as duck typing.
Hmm.
Now, the classic example is if it has a method named quack, it must be a duck, right?
Yeah.
You can think of an interface as a marker for a collection of methods. So instead of asking, do you quack, do you walk, do you eat, do you do X, Y, Z, you have a interface that represents like a bird or an animal or whatever, right? And you could ask, do you support this interface?
Okay.
And it's basically a it's a way of saying, do you quack? And so the compiler basically takes an interface and converts it to a marker in the runtime JavaScript. And then if you do a sort of a is check, like is this object an I duck, it will actually translate that into code that says look up this marker at runtime and see if it's there. And so a bunch of those constructs like namespaces, types, interfaces, inheritance, enumeration types, all of those are translated to JavaScript so that the core sort of C-sharp experience is not lost.
Excellent. Good. So essentially, yeah, I mean, that's a great description because, I mean, we have been talking about this earlier as well, the usefulness of a higher level syntactic expression, and then you have JavaScript as an IL.
Exactly.
It's the IL of the web.
Exactly.
Man,
exactly.
Right? But there's just so many weird things that go on, and one of the things I would think about in the language, one of the things about interfaces, for example, is there a guarantee. And in a language like JavaScript, it's hard to really guarantee things when you have the prototype-based stuff, and you property bags, you throw properties on stuff randomly at runtime, you have access to the global object. It seems to me the concept that you're guaranteed that this thing will do this on your behest, whenever it's called, in any context, you pulled it off. That's amazing.
Well, if you're writing all your code in C-sharp, obviously that is guaranteed by the C-sharp compiler itself.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you could do the same checks at runtime. And the ScriptSharp compiler doesn't actually produce that code to do the checking at runtime because it optimizes for the case where you've authored in C-sharp.
Okay, of course. So have you used his tool before?
I have not.
Interesting.
But I'm aware of it. Our typical audience isn't necessarily .NET oriented, and so when we go out, it could be Ruby backend or PHP or .NET, and so the concepts that we try to target are kind of to the masses. I mean, we definitely have a relationship with Microsoft and are looking toward to help better our tooling with them, but I haven't necessarily looked at your tool.
Right on. Well, we got a question from the audience. Perfect Phase, he's a niner. Is ScriptSharp used in any Microsoft products?
Definitely. In fact, in my talk tomorrow, I'm going to point out to a few of them. Mm-hmm. And I have three examples that I can probably use. Mm-hmm. The Bing Maps experience on the desktop is coded in ScriptSharp.
Nice.
So the sort of shell around the core map control is all ScriptSharp based. And it's a fairly large project, actually. This has been going on for some time. The interesting thing there with that project is it was all written in hand-coded JavaScript initially, and then it was ported to ScriptSharp. And the port, the resulting code was smaller, much smaller, and faster to load. And the dev lead asked, like, hey, what are your takeaways? Mm-hmm. And his point was, well, I got to focus on my code and my design, mm-hmm. And was able to refactor code and reuse code better because I had a better tool.
Hmm.
And then I'll just point out a couple other ones. Bing Mobile uses ScriptSharp for doing its mobile experience.
Hmm.
And Hotmail, Hotmail uses ScriptSharp indirectly by incorporating the Messenger features that have been coded in ScriptSharp. And that was probably actually one of the first big projects.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing there is that they've been able to write their code in a way that separates their UI code from their model code. And they're able to take their model code and cross-compile it to Silverlight and get a messaging stack over there as well.
Excellent. Now, since you're writing a compiler, what are some of the kind of weird edge cases you've run into with JavaScript that you could share with us? Has anything sort of made you go, wow?
Well, so I don't know if it's a specific edge case with JavaScript, but it's really more that I'll point out to, as a compiler, I didn't start out the project thinking it was a compiler, actually. If you look at JavaScript code and C-sharp code, it's almost identical. If I were to replace a few keywords, you can almost squint at some C-sharp code, and it might actually be JavaScript code or vice versa.
Hmm.
And so when I started the project, I thought it was actually textual substitution. But really, to understand what code to produce in the JavaScript, For example, properties don't exist in JavaScript, true properties. Well, they do in ECMAScript 5, actually, which is nice. But to understand that something's a property, you need to understand the C-sharp source that it was a property. Mm. And that, like, oh my god, this is a real compiler. And so it was kind of a restart into the project about 2 months into it, thinking like, oh my, this is a full-on compiler. And so the hard things about writing a compiler really are, A, keeping up with C-sharp. So that's sort of one of the biggest sort of pain points. And then implementing all the semantics of the language, like overloading, and type inference, those are things that I haven't done.
Sure.
That are, again, I think key part of the C-sharp experience.
Yeah.
Because it's just a big sort of project, just writing a compiler that matches all of those semantics.
Sure. Well, and you don't really have that stuff in JavaScript, right?
It's interesting, overloading, JavaScript developers do this very often, where they take a particular method and depending on the arguments, change the behavior, right? So you can think of those as alternate signatures. Mm-hmm. And so ScriptSharp actually offers the ability to define alternate signatures with a single implementation.
Oh, nice.
And so that code will then get translated to all the alternate signatures just disappear from the generated code. They're not there. Mm. And the single implementation then can go do the exact JavaScript patterns for writing a single implementation which checks the arguments.
Wow.
So there's a lot of like those little things that go on in this sort of translation.
It's very interesting. I mean, JavaScript is very, speaking of jQuery, I mean, that was designed really to hide the complexity of the DOM.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's the beauty of it, because a lot of people came to JavaScript and didn't like it because they were hurt so many times with all the cross-browser issues. And so when jQuery kind of smoothed that out, and it does that very well, and it's very fast, and so people are starting to come to start using JavaScript a little bit more and say, hey, this is not so bad. And then, it's nice. And then one of the things, areas of jQuery that people want it to do more than it does, and really there's only so many people on the jQuery team. They can only do so much and do it well. And so there are other libraries that are typically good to pull in with jQuery. Because other libraries like Dojo or MooTools, I don't know if they have more bandwidth or something, but they actually have more things that they could provide. But since jQuery is so prominent in the world,
sure.
People need something to fill that gap. And so tools like my company open sourced a project just recently to fill some of the gaps that we see when we consult. Mm-hmm. It's called Amplify. There's one that abstracts like the local storage, because different browsers do it differently, so it kind of abstracts that to use session or local storage or whatever else an older browser might use. Mm. And then one thing that we see a lot is when people do front-end development, they tightly couple their stuff too much. Like we have a component called request, and it's a way to separate what data you're going to get from actually the requesting the data. And so you define a request, and then you actually request it later. So at a future point in time, you could switch out the back-end to maybe get it from WebSockets or maybe use the Yahoo query language to get your data, or if you don't want cross-domain issues. And so we're trying to split out some of those concerns to make it easier to maintain down the road. And then mocking is another feature you could use if you're working on a team, front-end, back-end, and the back-end hasn't implemented the web services you need or whatever, then we provide a way you can mock that out to return data so you could actually test your UI. And both the back-end and front-end people could work independently. And then once the backend's finished, you can just, comment that piece out, and it all kind of works. And so we're trying to fill some of the gaps that we see recurring over and over again, and like publish and subscribe techniques,
sure.
Observable pattern. But yeah, you almost have to pull in things, other tooling to fill the gap. So.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of the backend or server side, the JavaScript is great because it runs in a browser, runs on the client, runs anywhere where the VM is around that supports it. But it's also being really pushed on the server now with Node.js.
Yes.
And C# on the server, in my opinion, is probably where it's been most successful in ASP.NET and MVC, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Is anyone taking advantage of ScriptSharp on the server?
Not yet, or at least not that I know of.
Okay.
They probably could. I mean, I think it's an open question, so I'm not going to say yes.
Okay.
There's nothing in the compiler itself that ties it to a browser. specifically. There's also nothing in the compiler that ties it to a particular framework. And so you can look at the compiler as basically generating script, and if the target environment runs script, then things should work. Now the place where it kind of gets a little fuzzy is some of the things that the JavaScript assumes, like, if, for example, the presence of a window object, for example, those things aren't going to be there on the server. The equivalents of it are probably going to be there.
The global object.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's maybe a few pieces of tactical glue that need to be added, but it's certainly an interesting scenario.
Excellent. We have questions from humans out in Twitter world. What would be your recommendation on JS libraries for web development to minimize load and give the most flexibility? It seems to be a question for you.
Yeah, a common technique is asynchronous script loading is a very good way to make your load a lot faster. There's a lot of tools out there recently to accomplish this. Mm-hmm. And so instead of actually declaring a script tag with a source, you do it in JavaScript, it'll actually inject it. So the benefit you get of that is it'll asynchronously go get that resource. And some of the libraries will actually maintain the order of execution, because it'll load it asynchronously, but they still execute in a different order. So some of the libraries, like there's LabJS, RequireJS, Microsoft employee wrote DeferJS, and the idea is to asynchronously load your JavaScript that you might not need initially. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some scripts that you don't need till later. And you could either preload it, unload, and it still won't affect your rendering, or you could wait until you actually need a script and load it at that point in time. So since a lot of websites are more being single-page applications, they're not redirecting, it's important to limit what scripts you load initially, and maybe they're clicking a dialog, and then you load something else up that dialog might need. So that's a common technique that not many people are aware of, but it's becoming more and more prevalent.
Now, that would require the use of eval, right?
It doesn't necessarily use eval. You could create tags in JavaScript and inject it into the head of the DOM.
Good.
So Script Sharp, actually, the next release that I'm going to be putting out this week actually has a script loader as well.
Oh, nice.
And it does those dependency management and the right ordering, async downloading. One other thing it does, which is something that really helps in mobile especially, is it will actually inline all the script on the first request. And script on the client will put it into local store. And subsequently, this set a cookie correctly so that the server subsequently just says, I'm not going to inline the script, just pull it out of local store. You already have it.
Nice.
And that significantly speeds up the startup time. And with HTML5, browsers with sort of local store capabilities in there, that's sort of applicable to desktop as well. And so the number one sort of bottleneck in the sort of initial load up of the page is the number of HTTP connections. Mm-hmm. And so if you save that, it helps. And so that's a key feature going into the Script Sharp script loader.
Interesting. Now, speaking of that, I mean, James Mickens was on the stage for our first panel. He's actually written some tools do that as well.
There's Silo. Certainly a lot of
but it's a research
experimentation
project.
Going on in script loaders with different things to tweak and optimize on.
Absolutely. It's important because it's being used so much. Al is back with a great question. What is the tooling situation for Spec Sharp? Is there a VS plugin or maybe even a NuGet package? Is that something you're planning?
Is that Script Sharp? Assuming it's Script Sharp. So again,
he must mean we're talking about Script Sharp, man. Spec Sharp, come on. No, he's talking about.
Again, as part of this new release that I'm alluding to, that I need to put out.
You better push that out.
I know, I better push
better
that
get
out.
It out.
It's been like, do I work on my mixed talk or do I work on this?
Work on the project.
So it'll be coming out any day. It actually has a brand new integration with ASP.NET MVC that's much better.
Nice.
Integrates with all the script loader that I was talking about.
Excellent.
And it's got a NuGet package as well.
Nice. Wow.
So there's still a install because the Script Sharp install actually installs project templates, MS build targets, and all of that kind of stuff. But for your integration into an ASP.NET project, for example, you've got a NuGet package that you'll be able to install into your app.
Excellent. One question I'd have about generally the problem that you're solving with Script Sharp. As we move further into the world where JavaScript actually becomes a first-class citizen in the world of general-purpose programming on the client, for example. Not that it isn't already, but do you know what I mean? If you look at the most used programming language in the world, it's like Java, C, C++, C#, VB, JavaScript.
I think JavaScript's actually higher.
JavaScript might be a little higher, but maybe so. But let's talk about as it advances forward and continue, you know, with HTML5, obviously, we know we've made the bet on it. Talk to me about how you think it needs to change a little bit or evolve, right, or people don't really need to use Script Sharp.
So this is a little bit of a great, question, actually, because I think it's a little bit about what's the philosophy behind Script Sharp. It kind of speaks to that. And I think as I've kind of thought about this for a few years, it really, and talking to some of the successful users, the real question comes down to this. Do you want your authored code to be equal to your deployed code? Do you want to do all of that optimization by hand, or do you want to let a tool do the thing? And so if you, for a moment, think that my authored code is going to be optimized for authoring and maintenance and managing my code, and my deployed code is actually going to be optimized for runtime, and those two might not be actually equal, then it suddenly becomes interesting to think of a compiler. Now, your source code language actually might be JavaScript with a whole bunch of annotations, and then compiled to runtime JavaScript, which A, removes the annotations, processes them, verifies them, makes use of them, right? And the Google's Clojure compiler is an example of that. On the other hand, if your desired language is Java, either because of your skill set, or because of the rest of your code base, or because of the Java tooling, then you've got GWT, Google Web Toolkit, that compiles to JavaScript. And then, of course, if you're in the .NET world and you like C# and you like the Visual Studio tooling, then Script Sharp is sort of a solution in that space. Mm-hmm. So it really boils down to this, which is, yes, JavaScript is very popular. It's great for getting started, great for prototyping. But as your code base grows, your code is an asset that you want to manage and be able to maintain and move forward. What are the right set of tools that get you in a good position?
Sure.
And very quickly, you start having large code bases where you want to optimize that for your authoring and management perspective, not for the runtime characteristics that you want.
Exactly. So, I mean, that also, from a philosophical point of view, is JavaScript as IL, or the WebAssembly. Assembly for the web.
I certainly believe that. In fact, I have a blog post maybe about 3 years ago now.
You do?
Or 4 years ago, titled JavaScript as the Assembly Language of the Web.
Right on, man. So what I would then go a little bit further there, there are JavaScript libraries that are rather large. jQuery is not a small library, right? What you're saying is, as the code bases get larger and they get more complicated, encapsulation becomes interesting. These things that we take for granted in object-oriented programming become more interesting, perhaps. Modularization becomes very interesting. I know that the next version of JavaScript, they're thinking about adding modules to the concept of modularity to it. Yep. Also very important for what you're talking about. And, of course, tooling, man.
Absolutely.
Static types are great for building tools.
Right, I think in terms of static versus dynamic, I don't have a religious sort of opinion
on
it.
Good, that's an old argument.
I think pockets of dynamic are actually very helpful.
Sure.
Anytime you're doing passing strings into methods, either for reflection or for serialization, those types of things, you really are doing dynamic typing. And it'd be better for actual syntax to support that.
Excellent. So we have one more question before we have a great episode of Cloud Cover coming up. Who is Null asks, for those critical mistakes an application developer makes on JavaScript jQuery, could you briefly describe a few other examples? Not exactly sure what that question means, so let's answer it with something pretty non-sequitur.
Okay. So what I think he might be saying is some common mistakes a JavaScript person would do coming from C# would be not understanding that the scope of variables is totally different from C#. C#, between curly braces, a variable that's declared in a curly braces stays in the curly braces. Mm-hmm. In JavaScript, that's not the case. And that confuses a lot of developers, and they bang their head and they blame JavaScript and hate it and then, you know, never come back. But they should understand it's a functional language. It's the scope is between the function that was declared, the beginning and the end. And it's because variables are actually hoisted to the top of the function, which is a very different thing that they're not used to. Mm-hmm. Some other things, in C Sharp, they're used to like true and false values, like Boolean stuff. But JavaScript is more like it's falsey. It's kind of false. You know, a zero is a false, a null is a false, undefined is a false. Like there's several, like maybe five or six things that could be false. Which if you don't know that, it's you would be writing the same C Sharp code that you used to, like this not equals null and this has a length of zero.
Yeah.
You could shrink a lot of that down to, you know, pretty small things.
Absolutely.
So there's a set of key concepts that if you don't understand them, you're just going to hit your head over the
Because it's a functional language, you can use closures.
Yes, exactly.
Right? You hide your scope in a closure and rock and roll. Hey, great to meet you.
Let's quickly answer that question.
Well, okay.
Can you add ref?
30 seconds.
Can you
answer
add ref?
Yes.
Absolutely. How do you go from calling other JavaScript libraries from Script Sharp?
Yes.
Can you add ref?
Yes.
Answer, quick answer is yes. I'm going to be demoing that tomorrow at my talk.
Excellent.
Nice.
Hey, thank you so much. Nice to meet you, man.
Nice. Thank you.